Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Well, EJ, there was food, there was liquor, there was a legendary gambling victory on Thursday evening. Of course, the one Thursday that we're not streaming is when we hit on a ridiculous 25-1 slip over on Prize Picks and made a whole bunch of money, but it's okay. We won. I'll take the win. We have a lot to go over today. So, Jay, Autumn, Anthony, whichever one of you happens to be editing this, roll the intro. Welcome, 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 one and all. It is the Week 12 Thanksgiving week recap here on the Bootleg Football Podcast. Again, recording a little bit later this week than normal, but still probably going to end up with the same ridiculous length of show that we always do. We have a hell of a lot of games to go over, a lot of different narratives and storylines and shockers and also things that were absolutely not shockers at all. But before we get to all those, EJ, buddy, how you doing? What are you drinking?
I'm good. It's the full meal deal. All the sides, dessert, drinks, whatever you want. We got the full Thanksgiving show. We will be doing the 3-2-1 format again instead of the 3-3-3 format because we're at that point of the season where playoff picture is starting to come into shape and some teams are definitely playing for next year their draft status. So we'll be talking less about them as we start studying the draft. But for the rest of the season, we'll be doing 3-2-1, 3 up, 2 down, 1 fun. But you know us, we're not going to be able to lay off the storyline. So the shows will still be pretty long, but this one's full and it's fun. It's a weird week. Thanksgiving's always a little bit strange. There's a whole whack of games on Thursday, which were awesome. And then there's this break. You get to digest those and your dinner. And then Sunday comes around, you kind of do it all over again. And then we pick up the pieces on a Tuesday and talk about it all.
Yeah, next year is going to be even crazier because there's going to be a Black Friday game on Amazon, which we actually probably will be streaming on Black Friday next year. And then we got the full Sunday, and then we got the Monday. It's God, Thanksgiving is going to be nuts. But that's 2023 Brett and EJ's problem. For now, right, let's talk about 2022 Thanksgiving, where we hit the motherlode. Recently, Prize Picks introduced a new feature where you could do a six-man slip for a 25x payout if you hit on it. And so EJ and I got together. We decided, you know what, let's throw $20 down on all these Thanksgiving. And EJ kind of sent me all of his little, he's like, okay, here's what I want for Jefferson and Amon-Ra and Barkley and CD and Darius and Cook. And these were, in fairness to EJ, every single one of these was on his list for what he picked. And I kind of picked out the ones that I agreed with. And you picked right.
That's the coolest thing is I went back the day after and because I said, hey, each game, here's, you know, I looked through the Prize Picks options. Here's 4 or 5 options for each game. This is what I'd put up there. And I'm really glad you didn't take more from the Bills game because the Bills game I bombed on. All the others,
we took what mattered. We took Amon-Ra because he's the safest one.
Right. That was the only one I got right for my Bills guesses. The other ones, I was 4 out of 5 for the other two games. So that was a lot easier choice. There's a lot better things to pick from there. But combination slip, again, I can't play slips because I live in Washington. This is just like, hey, what I would do. You do what, and you picked right, which was amazing.
And it's funny because, you know, part of the reason why we felt so comfortable with going all the way to 6 was because Justin Jefferson was a free square on Thanksgiving. Prize Picks did over-under for half a yard receiving, so basically it was just like a free square. And you could have done over-under $130, and it still would have hit. Like, that's how ridiculous of a day he had. We called him out for, you know, potential Offensive Player of the Year honors before the season started, and I think he's exceeding even our expectations. And he's just, he is utterly ridiculous. He's the best receiver in the league right now. I think, you know, obviously there are other guys in his tier, but in terms of if I, you know, gun to my head, had to pick one who's the most complete, I would say Justin Jefferson. He is playing out of his damn mind. You know, Amon-Ra St. Brown, once again, playing like a top 10 receiver, you know, more than just a slot guy. Like a lot of people, I think, pegged him coming out. Like he does everything, and he's been the heart and soul of that Lions offense. Buck 22 in his own right. Saquon, that was the one I felt a little bit kind of iffy about, because, you know, when it comes to Saquon, like one touch can be 40 yards. And so we went under 22 and a half receiving, and thank God that one stuck.
You know what's crazy about that? That was one of the harder picks, because I picked some unders. You tend to pick overs when you do it. And I love the positivity. It's cool. But I decided to pick a couple of unders, and Saquon was the under. And like you said, one touch can be lightning. He had four catches
for 13 yards. Like, that doesn't happen with him.
He had four catches and still didn't make more than 22 and a half yards. Like, that's the sweat. If you give Saquon four touches and tell me he's not getting 20 yards, I'm like, but he held out for us, and so the picks kept rolling.
Yeah, that Cowboys defense, man. They really are. They're fast, aggressive, physical, beat the shit out of everybody. We're going to see them against the Colts on Sunday night this week, and it's going to be a disaster. But CD hit is over. Slayton hit is over. Dalvin, you know, we needed 11 and a half receiving, and he doesn't typically catch a whole lot of balls in that offense. Not that he can't. They just don't really emphasize it. But we hit that on the last drive. We got to 14 yards, and there we go. $500, EJ. And we're going to use that to springboard this Thursday when we stream, because now we can play the big boy slips. Now we got the capital. We're like, hey, we want to put $100. We want to put $100 slip for the next 5 weeks. We can do that. And
yeah,
hurt us.
And I had that gambler's remorse, right? I was like, oh man, if we'd only. But then I was like, dude, it's a six slip, or it's a six parlay slip, right? You always say that when you win, but no, it was amazing. It was a lot of fun. We were waiting on Dalvin on that last drive. He had either two or three catches and 11 yards, and I was like, come on, man. One dump off. So we left where we were watching Thanksgiving a little bit before that game was over here on the West Coast. And I was texting you in the car. I was like, dude, he gets one catch. We're golden. You're like, I know. So it was a lot of fun. Strung out. Thanksgiving games were a lot of fun anyways. But big thanks to Prize Picks. I hope you tailed the slip. I realize that's been a pretty good strategy throughout the year. I really hope some folks reached out on Twitter and said thanks for the slip. So I assume they tailed it and they had very nice holidays. But big thanks to Prize Picks for sponsoring the show, making all this content possible. Huge thanks to them for the free Justin Jefferson square on the holiday. All of that stuff added up to a really legendary win and a lot of fun.
And again, we're going to be streaming this Thursday. What is the Thursday game this week?
Do you remember? It is. Bum, bum, bum. Hang tight. Bills, Pats.
Oh. Oh. That one's actually going to be really hard.
Yeah, the slips in that one, especially for the Patriots, because they, again, were one thing in the beginning of the year. Now they're something else. And on any given week, they can go a lot more or a lot less for a given player. They're not a single player dominant offense where you can look at like an Amon-Ra St. Brown and go, yeah, you give me up to 100 yards, I'm taking it. You give me 75, it's a lock.
Yeah, it's like you want to believe that Ramondre is going to get a whole bunch of yards every single week, but it's also the Patriots and you have PTSD from that. So
there's a really interesting stat about the Patriots and how they were rolling and a very dominant run game and how that coin has flipped.
What was the stat?
Yeah, this is a lot of fun. Well, it's not fun if you're a Patriots fan, but through the first 5 weeks, the Patriots were 11th in rush play success rate. Since then, so that's week 6 through 12, 32nd.
So week 5 against the Lions, they ran all over them and then haven't run over anybody since, basically.
And not only haven't run over anybody since, they fell off the damn cliff. They are bouncing off the bottom. So they went from 11th, which is basically top third in the league, to last.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Fucking yikes. Well, speaking of the Lions, by the way, they are not the team they were in week five. I'll give them credit for that. But they still did have a particularly painful loss. We're going to go over that. First things first, in three up. Three up number one, those aforementioned plucky Lions going up against the Bills. First things first, I do want to say the Lions are so scrappy, and I root for them every single week because, God, how many games this year, and also last year, and also the year before that, you know, have we seen them snatch defeat from the jaws of victory and become just so close to getting on a roll like we think they can get on a roll? And, like, they're not a bad team. Like, they play people tough. They're not a pushover. They haven't been a pushover in a while. Like, their record isn't great, but they always give people a game. And the Bills were no different. Like, they absolutely could have won this game. And yet, when the Bills absolutely needed a throw to be made, Josh Allen dropped a seed to Stephon Diggs up the seam against what to me kind of looked like cover five robber. So there was like eight guys in coverage, and it looked like it was man coverage with two high safeties and then like a robber sitting over the middle. And the robber just like didn't relate to Diggs at all and sink and get depth. So Diggs just ran right behind him, and Josh dropped that ball right in there. Some people were saying, oh, but he was spying Allen. And I'm like, well, from 15 yards away, I don't think you spy Allen from 15 to 20 yards away. It just looked like he was playing robber and fucked it up to me. But anyway, was an amazing throw, great catch, set the Bills up for success. They won the game. But this was less about the Bills beating the Lions and more so about the Bills surviving the Lions. And I do think that eventually Detroit is going to learn to win those types of games. I really do. It might not be this year. I think it's going to be next year, but they are so damn close. The Bills just happen to be one of the best teams in the league, so they are well-trained in winning those types of games. They've done it a lot, or at least with Allen, you know, marching down the field with under a minute. Like, he's more than capable of doing that. And so they're just kind of further along in the development. But I do think eventually Detroit will get there, too.
The eventually will be defense for the Lions. So first things first, the Bills have stabilized. They had a moment with Josh's elbow injury, and since that scare, they've made a big adjustment, and they've figured out ways to keep rolling and win, even with him playing hurt. That's a big deal. That's what good teams do. They take a punch, and they adjust, and they figure it out. The Bills have figured out a way to keep winning, which is big news. But on to the Lions. Ben Johnson, the Lions' offensive coordinator, he needs some really heavy praise for what he's built in Detroit, because the Lions, quote-unquote, learning how to win is going to be getting a defense, because the Lions are third in scoring TDs in the NFL with incredible balance. They're eighth overall in total scoring.
They can put up points. Yep.
So 16 rushing and 17 receiving touchdowns. That's incredible balance from a modern NFL offense. They're eighth overall in scoring when you add in kicking. That puts them within 1 point of fifth place, the Bengals, who are overall fifth at 25.9 points a game. They've scored the most points in their division, the NFC North. They've scored more points than the Vikings. And everybody's like, oh, Kevin O'Connell and Kirk and Justin. We just talked about it at the top of the show. Like, Vikings are Lions have scored more points. They need to get a defense, though. So while they're eighth overall in total scoring and third overall in scoring touchdowns, they are last in the league by a mile for points allowed at 28.2. The next closest is the Cardinals at 26.8. Middle of the pack for points allowed in the NFL is 22 points per game. If the Lions allowed 22 points per game this year, they'd have a lot more wins.
They'd probably be looking a lot like the Vikings, honestly.
That's the point I wanted to make, which is the Vikings, while scoring less points, four, are 9-2.
Yeah.
The Lions, who've scored more points, are 4-7 because they've allowed 310, whereas the Vikings have only allowed 257. So if you can take a Lions defense, do whatever you need to do. They need some dudes. They have dudes. They need more dudes. And they've got some schematic issues as well, but dudes are going to cover up a lot of that. If you can crank that from 28.2 points a game down to the 22 point per game range, this Lions team will suddenly learn how to win games, which means not having to boat race everybody every week, which they are capable of doing, and we've seen them do it, but not with the leaky sieve on the other half of the coin. So when they get a little bit more defense, this team is a very real threat to win the NFC North.
And what's fascinating is that 28.2 allowed per game is after a relatively stable three-week stretch of like 19 per game once they fired their DB coach and they dramatically improved. And they're still at almost 30 for the season as an average. So it was that bad. It was that bad. It's better now, but it was that bad. The 4-7 record makes a lot of sense. Three up number two. I know that sounded negative, but we were trying to frame it in a positive way of like, the Bills are good and the Lions could be good eventually. Anyway,
it's not negative. It's factual. Like, the Lions' factual offense is really, really good. And everybody needs to recognize that they're good right now. Everybody says, oh, if you just get a quarterback. Folks, they don't need a quarterback right now. They've scored the third most touchdowns in the league with Jared Goff. It's
also
working.
I think their record, they're not going to have a good record, but I think their record will be, quote unquote, too good to get Young or Stroud or whoever. Like, I don't think that they're going to be trash enough to get any of those guys anyway. So,
and if Ben Johnson stays, do you really want to upset the apple cart, right? If he doesn't,
if he might get some,
he's going to get some interviews for sure. Whether or not he goes is a whole nother thing. But if he stays, do you really want to like start over with a rookie quarterback when you were scoring enough points to win? The answer is no. You'd keep stable and push those resources to defense and say, hey, if we score this many and just allow a whole lot less, we'll be fine. Like, we can win our division right now.
All right, three up number two, Bengals-Titans. This game was fascinating to me because I think it's an interesting preview of Bengals-Chiefs. Because what people don't realize is that in terms of, like, personnel groupings, not necessarily, like, overall style, but in terms of personnel groupings, the Titans and the Chiefs are relatively similar. They're two of like the top five teams in terms of using 12 and 13 personnel sets, meaning two or three tight ends on the field. You know, Titans are, I can't remember the exact place they're in, but I know they're both top five, but Titans are about 38%. Chiefs are about 34, 36%, somewhere around there. So they're both over a third of their total offensive snaps with multiple tight ends on the field. And you would think that that's, at least on the Chiefs' end, because, oh, they want to run the ball a lot. Not necessarily. They still throw a shitload. The Titans do run a lot out of 12 and 13 personnel. So I felt like this game was an interesting preview because I was like, okay, well, how are the Titans going to play from these 12 and 13 personnel looks against the Bengals' defense, which likes to play a lot of nickel against 12 and 13 personnel? Will the Bengals still be able to stop the run and prove they can stop the run despite being in a pass defense personnel? And yeah, they were able to stop the run. 11 of 21 running back carries for the Titans came against nickel outside zone. They only had two runs for minus 2 yards on outside zone. Inside zone, they had two runs for eight, so about 4 yards a carry. Duo, weirdly enough, even though we don't think of the Titans running a lot of duo, that was one of the only runs they had a modicum of success on, 4 for 19. Counter, they ran twice for a total of 1 yard, and then they ran power once for no yards at all. So, again, this was all against nickel from 12 and 13 personnel sets, and the Titans got stuffed. And honestly, the Bengals on the year from their 4-2-5 nickel package, they're allowing 2.7 yards per carry against outside zone, 2.8 against inside zone. Duo, they're allowing 1.7. Like, they're pretty much only getting gashed every now and then by counter and power, because against a lighter defensive front, you would expect that. But, like, they're willing to eat 6 yards on power if it means you can't throw against nickel, because if all of your zone stuff and all of your duo stuff is getting shut down, like, you're not going to live on power and counter. No offense is going to live on power and counter. So the fact that they can stop the run from nickel and did that against the Titans, who love running against nickel, is a big deal. And I find that to be a fascinating preview of the Chiefs game, because if the Titans can't run, the Chiefs for damn sure won't be able to run. And now I think we're going to see a lot of Patrick Mahomes trying to throw against a very stingy, annoyingly stingy Bengals pass defense that's going to be sitting in nickel all day and saying, go ahead, Pat, let's see what you got. I don't know if it's going to work for him, but I think that's the matchup we're going to get.
Yeah, there's a couple of different variables that twist. It is a fascinating look at personnel groupings and whether or not you can stop it. Chiefs interior offensive line, a little better than the Titans interior offensive line. But again, Derrick Henry is better than anybody the Chiefs are running out of the backfield. So be fascinating to see how those balance. But DJ Reader coming back, big thing for this team in terms of their ability to stop the run. They are a different team with him playing up there. But this was a great football game. I'm going to go sort of over the stats and take the 10,000-foot view of this. This was a great, fun football game. Teams traded blows. It came down to the wire. For a lot of the day, they looked like mirror images. For as much as we're talking about the Titans possibly looking like the Chiefs, the Bengals and the Titans had a lot of similarities. We both had both QBs toss great seam balls in this game. Like early, they both ripped the seam. Later, Burrow started to separate himself with the sort of cover two hole shots to T. Higgins in the corner. He hit about three of those, and they were all big plays. Running backs playing at a high level. Both teams, check. Derrick Henry did his thing, and Samaje Perine. We got to talk about Samaje Perine. We talked about him a couple of weeks ago, having all the receiving yards and how that was helping the offense. He was the lead back in this one, and he has developed. Mm-hmm. And people say, oh, how did you have him rated coming out? And I say, I don't care, because he is way better now than when he came out. He is more complete. He has continued to develop in the run game and the pass game. He was an absolute tone setter for the Bengals. First play of the game, stiff-armed a DB into the ether. Like, was like, nah, this is how it's going to be all day. He is shifty. He's powerful. He's much more dangerous in the pass game than he was when he came out. He looks much more complete. So shout out to Samaje Perine. Young, big play wide receivers making big plays. Yes, T. Higgins had one of the most staggering drops I've ever seen.
By his standards, yeah.
Early in the game, ball hit him in the hands and it looked like he took it and threw it down. It was very weird, very anti-T. Higgins. And you could tell that Burrow came back to him and said, look, dude, I'm coming back to you. Like, shake it off. You're going to get eight more of those. So, like, don't sweat it. And they did, and he did. And we continue to see Treylon Burks on the other side starting to make those big plays. Just, I was going to say mossing a guy, but Moss wasn't that physical. Like, Treylon Burks just stole that ball down the middle early in the first half. And then tight ends refusing to go down on both sides. Hayden Hurst rumbling through the defense, and then Chigakonkwo on the other side, like getting pushed from his offensive lineman. Like, these two teams looked like each other, and this is a potential playoff matchup in its own right.
Again.
So, again.
Yeah.
So, it was a, I just want to say it was a fun football game. As somebody with no skin in the game either way as to who won this game, this was a really good, fun football game to watch as a football fan. And one note about development's not linear. We say this over and over again on this show. Travion Williams. Travion Williams is a guy that I loved. Running back. Came out in 2019. Got drafted in the sixth round. Everybody's like, oh, EJ, you love Travion Williams. You said he was so good. He's never done anything. 2019, the year he was drafted. No yards. 2020, 157 rushing yards and 30 receiving. For the season, 2021, 51 rushing yards.
Total?
Total.
Okay.
Yeah, nothing. He's been on the practice squad for a lot of this time. Like, everybody's like, oh, EJ, were you wrong about Travion? I was like, no, he's super talented. But this is how it goes with running backs. And we see this. We saw it with D'Ernest Johnson in Cleveland a couple of years ago. Like, even last year. I was like, no, he's really good. Is he getting any carries? No, he's playing behind Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. Yeah. Last year on a Thursday.
Never gonna get touches. Yeah.
Last year on Thursday, D'Ernest Johnson comes out 120 yards. Okay. So Travion Williams, same way. Basically, his first 3 years are a nothing burger. It's 200 and something rushing yards and 30 to 50 receiving yards. It's just nothing. Last week, he shows up on the stat sheet. Kick returns. Five kick returns for 124 yards, almost a 25-yard average. And I was like, oh, look. I was scrolling through stats, getting the agenda. I was like, look, Travion Williams is playing. He's off the practice squad. That's great. He's making a living on special teams. Good for him. Fourth year in the league, grinding away, making a living on special teams. Sunday comes around. He has 18 yards on two carries.
Which, both of them, again, not... It doesn't sound crazy, you know, a whole lot on the stat sheet, but when you watch the carries, you still see the spark. Yeah. I saw it when I was going through the All-22 for this game. I was like, there's something there. I know he's RB3 or RB4 on the depth chart, but there's something there.
Yeah, and one catch for 24 yards.
Mm-hmm.
So three touches and basically 42 yards, which were big for where they came in the game for the Bengals. So here's a guy drafted in the sixth round, been on and off the practice squad, done nothing for 3 years, but just when you tell young players, like, stay ready, be ready, keep grinding, keep getting better, keep working, the chance will come. Last week comes on kick returns. This week, only a few touches, like three touches in the whole game, but each one of them a first down. Like, this was just a great credit to a player. I mean, think about all the practices, the injuries, the off-season training. 4 years worth of pro football is a lot. And he had basically nothing to show for it before 2 weeks ago. But here he is. It's like, still good. Told y'all. Can still do it. So, shout out to Travion Williams.
One last note on this game. If you go to the ESPN playoff machine and you look at, like, the projected seeds based on where we're at right now, if playoffs started today, third seed Tennessee is hosting sixth seed Cincinnati. So we might see this matchup again, and there is a whole lot of implications for that because these two teams are a fascinating matchup. So hopefully we get to see it again in January. All right, three up. Number three, this one's, oh God, I've been waiting for this for months at this point. I have been desperate to spread Trevor Lawrence propaganda on this show and have not had an excuse to until this Sunday. I didn't get to see the comeback live, or like that fourth quarter marks live, because I was watching other games. But when I went back and watched the All-22, because I saw the score and I was like, the Ravens lost? How did the Ravens lose? Yeah. And then I watched the fourth quarter for Trevor Lawrence and I was like, oh, they got slaughtered by a first overall pick who finally looks like he was playing like a first overall pick. He went scorched earth. Like, Trevor Lawrence had four big-time throws in this game, which is like a stat on PFF where it's not just big chunk yards. It's like level of difficulty and you know, are you moved off your spot? Are you placing it correctly? Are you reading? There's a lot that goes into big-time throws, but he had four of them in this game, which tied for the lead across the entire league for the week. And three of them came in the fourth quarter alone. There was one that he threw, if I recall correctly, it was Ravens were in quarter half, and they ran, was it like Sale or something like that, where it was a go route on like an attack and slip release against a corner on the quarter side to the field. And so he threw like an inside leverage go ball from the far hash against quarters, and it was pitch perfect. It was spotless. It was incredible. It was immaculate. It was one of the best balls that anybody's thrown this whole season. And it came in that spot with like 30 seconds left in the game. Got to drive down the field. Got to have it. And he hit that throw to Zay Jones. And I'm like, oh, he's here. He's figured it out. And then like two plays later, he hit the touchdown.
This Which was also a crazy
also
throw.
A crazy throw. Phenomenal throw. Perfectly placed up high where only his guy could get it. But this was the Trevor Lawrence coming out party. And I've been waiting so damn long for it. And we finally got it.
I think it was a Jaguars coming out party. Trevor powered it. Like, with all good teams, Your quarterback has to play well. And if you're going to play at that elite level, if you're going to move up and win games that you quote unquote shouldn't, your quarterback's going to have to ascend. And Trevor has shown plays and even drives of ascension, but not really games. And this was the game where the whole team came out. They served it up to him on a platter. So the Jaguars make you defend every inch of the width of the field. And we say that, and it's one of those football, they do. They run a lot of stuff to the boundary. They run bunch screens, and there was a play early in the game, little swing out to Zay Jones, looked like maybe a 2-3 yard gain. No, he squeezes past the defender with speed. He gets 11. He scoots right up the sideline, and oh, it's a first down. It's not 3 yards. It's a 12 yards first down. They're going to push you out to the boundaries, push you out to the boundaries, because, look, Trevor can trigger it out there very quickly, and it's just substitute run game. Talk about that all the time. And the first time you start inching out, they're going to hit you off tackle, inside, Jermichael Hasty. You're going to be wide of the hashes, and they're going to go right up the middle because they're pushing, 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 and you finally take two steps on your set to get outside to cheat, to go over and mash that power screen, and now they're going to go right up the middle. And that, combined with a roster move that was a little under the radar, which is Jermichael Hasty being added to this team, it's paid big dividends. He was critical in this game. He had a lot of success in San Francisco as an undrafted free agent. Kind of when he went to Jacksonville, I don't think anybody was like, "Ooh, Jermichael Hasty." They're like, "Oh yeah, guy."
I was just because I really like Jermichael Hasty.
Yeah, he had his own little coming out party in this game, which was amazing. Trevor's just seeing it so well right now. He's so much quicker than he was last year. Now, Doug has him confident and playing fast, and you can see it on the field, but it's also development. He's been there. He's seen him. He's more comfortable with the weapons he has. He still has some of those hesitation plays, but that balance has shifted. Last year, there was more of those and then occasional flashes that made us say, ooh, like, he's still that guy. This year, it's a lot of plays where he triggers very, very quickly, and the end result of the play matters because of that. Great example, 1:17 to go in the second quarter. Jags blitz the middle linebacker. He saw it instantly, triggered to the hot throw, which is a running back going around the left side, but he threw it so fast and on target, turns out to be like a 25-yard game because he was like, identified blitz, zing, instant. Right, it was that instant recognition that let the running back get the ball in his hands and really, you know, make a ton of extra yards after that. No hesitation. And this Jags team, when I say they handed it to Trevor, they needed a play. They needed a lot of plays.
It was like Trevor, four plays in a row.
Trevor's throwing, but that's the last drive. What happened before that? They needed to make a play, and Andrew Wingard comes through with the forced fumble at 5:44 to go, and that starts it. That kicks it off. Without that, they lose this game. Mm-hmm. And teams that are starting to get ready to make that jump are teams that can make those plays when they need them. Situationally, that's really important. You'll see teams make plays sort of don't matter. They're tucked away in the second quarter or whatever, and you're like, that's cool. But when it comes down to crunch time, 5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, and you're trailing, your safety comes up, pokes the ball out, and the whole team goes nuts. The whole team defense goes, hey, we handed our offense the chance they need. They take the lead. Ravens, to their credit, go back and take it back all the way down the field. And there's only a minute and some left, right? And you're like, okay, that's that. Nice job. You know, Jags can't hold it down at home. And here comes Trevor, right? Makes play after play after play, throw after throw. He's like, no, guys, we got it, right? This was very, dare I say it, Joe Burrow-like. No panic. No, we're taking them.
I don't think you're that off by that, because it was very much like no panic, in
I got
control.
It. We're going to do this. We're going to take them. And after the first big throw, you could all see him like roll up and be like, yep, this is going to happen. Like, he can do this. He said it was going to happen, and now it's going to happen. Cool. And that is a shift. That is something you need to pay attention to. Two from the Jaguars. Are they going to make any noise this year? Down the stretch, they're not. Like, in terms of the playoffs, in terms of how the league shakes out, is this team growing to where it is going to be a real danger with Trevor at quarterback and all the talent they've assembled? Yes, it is.
You say they're not going to make any noise, but...
but!
Now, will they make the playoffs? Yeah, probably not. But they have games against... two games against the Titans, a game against the Jets, and a game against the Cowboys all in the last 5 weeks.
Oh, they can spoil.
They can
sure.
spoil the shit out of some teams here.
And they're going
the
to. Yeah. They're going to because they're playing really, really well right now. They still need to clean it up. There are still plays that Trevor, for all the praise we just heaped on him, still is waiting too long. Looks like last year. But again, it's so many fewer, and that means so many more drives are being completed. So many more points are being scored. They're really starting to figure it out, and you can just see it. When the defense is able to do that consistently with them, this team is going to be nasty.
Yeah, I'm really excited for their future. And I'm just really excited that like the vibes in that locker room are great. I don't know if – did you see Andrew Wingard's post-game interview with his locker? He literally said it, and he's talking – they were asking about Trevor. And he's like, yeah, Trevor didn't really get a rookie year because he was stuck with Urban Meyer last year. Like, he literally said, you stuck with Urban Meyer. And then he's like, I would die for Doug Peterson. Like, that's the culture shift here. Like, that locker room doesn't actively hate their head coach, and you're starting to see that pay off. The culture is good. The vibes are good. The talent is there. Like, they won't make it this year. But they will spoil the shit out of somebody who's trying to, whether it's the Jets or the Cowboys or the Titans. I don't know who it's going to be. They're going to get one of them. Guarantee it, they're going to get one of them. All right, let's get off the good vibes, go to the bad vibes, talk a little bit about two down.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Down, bad vibes all around. We have two teams that are the pinnacle of bad vibes in the league right now, both on the field and perhaps even in the locker room. There are a lot of questions with the Cardinals right now, a lot of potential buyer's remorse, not just with the quarterback, but with the head coach. I would probably lay things more at the feet of head coach Cliff Kingsbury than I would on Kyler. But Kyler, even he would tell you, he hasn't played amazingly well so far this year. And he was at a post-game press conference after their loss to the Chargers. And they asked him about the pick that he threw on 4th-and-1. And he said that schematically, and I'm quoting him, schematically we were fucked.
Schematically, I mean, they kind of we were kind of fucked.
And EJ and I disagree a little bit on the meaning of that. EJ thinks it was a shot at Cliff. I think it was more him laying out the fact that schematically they actually were fucked. Like, it was an RPO from 4 strong, and it was a man coverage call, and Aloe Gilman was off by 7 yards, and then he stepped down like literally right as the ball was snapped, and like Kyler had already pulled the ball on the read to throw the flat screen. This is a play that I went back and looked at every single play they had run from 4 strong. They'd run 28 passes from 4 strong this year. This was not a play they had called before. And so he thought it was going to work. And so he pulled the ball and he had the flat screen open until it wasn't, because Gilman stepped down and took it away. And then he's like, oh shit, I got nowhere to throw the ball. Kind of pointed at Hopkins, say go deep, and then, you know, threw a pick. So Kyler wasn't wrong. Like, they were schematically fucked. The Chargers played really well against it. Whether or not it was a call out of Cliff for calling that play, I think is up to interpretation.
There's context here, and it's not just the clip of Kyler saying that. It's prior to that. The question prior to that, the press was trying to get him to say, what do you really think, Kyler? Right? Like, lay it at Cliff's feet, because look, that's what the press wants. It's going to sell papers. I get it. Or clicks at this point. And he took the high road. He was like, nah, not gonna. And then They came back to it on this one, and he tried to stay out of it, and he eventually went, nah, we're fucked. We're boned. This wasn't going to happen. And if you don't take into account all the context from earlier in the season, all the feuding between Kyler and Cliff,
yelling on the sideline, all
and
that.
Cliff yeah. saying, fine, you call plays. Let's see. Like, how childish is that? You okay, quarterback? Let's see if you can do it. Right? Like, that is all context that leads to this moment. He's at the podium and he's like, you know, why'd you throw a pick? And he's like, because my head coach called a dumb play. Right? And that's the way it sounds, given all that history. I would say if this was clean and there was no other waves in the water, that I would agree with you that it just, we called a play, they made a good play, it's no big deal. Like, it happens, they get paid too. That's what I would say if all that other stuff wasn't there. But all that other stuff is there. And this is how you can tell from the outside when a team as a whole is not like Jacksonville, right?
Yes.
Just like you
yes.
can tell from Jacksonville and Andrew Wingard's interview where he says openly, hey, it was terrible before and now it's great. We all love it here. The opposite messages have come out of the Cardinals locker room all season and for longer than that, frankly. So there's a lot of context here, but this is a team that is clearly not vibing. They are not happy with where they're at. It is not going well. They're not winning. There's a lot of ruffles under the surface, and this is how it bubbles out. It's these little things. It's what doesn't get said. It's what happens on the sideline. It's the veiled shots, which, again, you're not going to come out and say, look, Cliff's a jerk, and I hate him, and I want him gone, because that's not what happens. You go, well, schematically, the call, we were screwed, and who calls the plays, right? So it's connecting the dots to say, behind the scenes, things are not well.
What I don't know is, because they just signed everybody to an extension, they got a lot of guaranteed money on the table. And Michael Bidwell has a lot of money, but not as much as, say, some of the other richer. it's kind of a very weird, skewed scale. Richer NFL owners, where it's like, oh, if we make a $100 million mistake, it's a drop in the bucket. It's $100 million is not a drop in the bucket for Michael Bidwell. So I don't know if they're going to move off Cliff after this year. Like, if it really comes down to, is he willing to take the financial hit to fire Cliff Kingsbury and bring in somebody else? And even then, like, who would you bring in? You know, because I'm sure there's a lot of, you know, coaching candidates around the league that maybe would not want that job because of how Arizona has been run over the last, I don't know, 10 to 15 years.
Yeah.
It's not the most attractive position out of all of them. Not that it's a total dumpster fire, but it's definitely not the most attractive position. So it's like, would D'Amico Ryans even want to go there? I don't know that he would, you know? So I don't know if they're going to take the hit to clean house, because that's very expensive for them. Like, the Broncos can fire Nathaniel Hackett and not give a shit because the owner has like $80 billion. Like, they don't care. Bidwell's a lot different. So I don't know if they're going to be willing to take that financial hit. And even then, if they do fire him, who would they get that's better? I truly don't know. So it's kind of a lose-lose scenario here where we know what the problem is and I don't know how to fix it other than hope Steve Keim has a good draft, maybe.
Well. That's the other part, is if you're going to let Cliff go, because you handcuffed Cliff and Keim, they both signed big extensions in the offseason. Arizona laid it on the line that this was the trio between Kyler, Cliff, and Steve Keim that were going to take them forward. They threw big money at all of them. So this is their triumvirate. Now, if you kick one leg out of the stool, if you say, okay, you're kicked out of the club, Cliff, do you send Keim with him? Because Keim's drafts have generally not been well regarded, not necessarily because they're bad players, but in terms of bringing those players in, organizational fit and development has been largely panned. I've seen some very talented players end up in Arizona and not reach their potential, so that's always a red flag. So do you do the whole clean house, which is wildly expensive? That's a lot of sunk money for people to pay people you're not employing anymore. And if so, would it make it a more attractive destination with a new pairing between GM and head coach, which we often see? We've seen that multiple places around the league. that when it comes time for true change, it's regime change, it's the whole thing. So that would definitely make it a different destination. But in terms of ready-made to win right now, it's going to be difficult.
Two down, number two, equally bad vibes over in Tampa Bay. Another preseason favorite amongst many in the sports world. And for good reason. You know, you had Tom Brady, you had largely intact roster from their Super Bowl year, largely intact coaching staff from their Super Bowl year. Everything was supposed to be okay. And it is not okay. And there was an answer that Todd Bowles gave after the game that I truly don't understand.
Seconds elapsed. There wasn't a timeout called yet. You had three of them. Why didn't you call a timeout there or Tom on the field to preserve some time? And you look back, and I know it's hindsight now, but that 26-yard catch by Julio Jones, you had 8 seconds. You could have had 25 seconds with two more timeouts there.
Or it could have been an interception as well. And we said if we didn't get yards on the first down, on the first play, we wouldn't call a timeout. We would probably let the clock run. If he saw something, he could throw it. But we didn't get any yards on the first play. We got 1 or 2 yards with Rashard, and we were backed up. So if we had threw a pick and the ball would have went the other way and they had kicked the win field goal, we felt better going into overtime. So I didn't do it.
I don't understand it either, because the logic is I was afraid to call a timeout because Tom Brady might throw an interception. Say okay. That one to yourself out loud, slowly, listen to it ring in your ears, and then try and say it again without laughing. It's silly. And I understand that this whole dance that we're talking about, this is reading the tea leaves, this is performative, this is what coaches and Coach Beak do on sideline interviews and postgame. They're managing. They're managing expectations. They're managing their locker room. They're doing all that stuff. But usually the result of that is pretty milquetoast, right? They don't say a lot. They just kind of want to go down the middle and we'll look at the tape and we'll come back and give better effort and execution and all those coach cliches. And there's a reason. It's protection for them from saying things like this.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is damaging. This is dumb. The players saw this and they all heard it. And they're all going to look at Todd Bowles now, who's well respected in NFL circles, but he stepped in the bucket here. This one's dumb. Right, I wasn't going to call a timeout because I was afraid that Tom Brady might turn it over. It doesn't make any sense. Players are going to say, hey, you said a terribly stupid thing that really doesn't have any justification. You're going to lose some credibility with us. Now, lose the locker room, that's a stretch. But on a team that has underperformed with a lot of talent, yes, a lot of injuries, but we're talking about a 5-win team. 12 weeks in, 5-6. This is not a team that's like, well, we're winning anyways because winning cures all ills in the NFL. There, things like this are going to start to sting, right? Dissent is going to get fomented in the locker room by comments like this. And the honorable mention for two down that we're not even talking about is the Broncos, where a defensive tackle got in the face of the all-world quarterback and let him have it. For all the defense, I think, all the defenders wanted to be Mike Pinnell and get in Russ's face and say, hey, man, we've been hauling our water and you haven't. And the most
can you
telling,
please stop sucking?
The most telling thing about that was nobody came to Russ's aid.
Nobody. Nobody.
Russ
stood up.
Had
I mean,
to stand there.
After the game was like, oh, yeah, we're just trying to get people, you know, we're trying to get each other fired up. Like, it's nothing. Like, it's like, dude. You got in your quarterback's face and said, step it the fuck up. Quarterback's making like $40 million a year. Like, that's not nothing.
And Russ stood there wide-eyed and went, oh, okay.
Did you see Nathaniel Hackett with the clipboard in front just like, I am not turning around. I am not paying attention to this. This is not my fight.
These are the ways that you can tell that all is not well in an NFL locker room because we're not in there. We don't have day-to-day working knowledge. These are the signs outwardly that, oh boy, it's not a happy workplace right now. And it never is when you're losing in the NFL, but places like the Broncos, where you've put all this money in, places like the Bucks, where, you know, you've got the GOAT at quarterback and the expectations were high. You were returning a very talented roster. You're expected to walk over this division. Now, in all fairness, the Bucks are in first place in their division, but they have 5 wins. Do you really think they're going to roll over anybody in the playoffs? They could, because Tom's better in the playoffs than anybody in history ever. It's not looking really likely, and this is how you know that the water is choppy.
The thing that gets me is like, oh, you know, well, what if he threw a pick and it's, you know, then they get the ball back and they can score. It's like, how do you think overtime works? Like, if you throw a pick in overtime, they get the ball back and score. So, like, what's the fucking difference? Like, there's no difference. Just throw the ball.
It's a nonsensical answer, and that's where it's going to fall flat with players who are out there laying it on the line. Let's be completely honest about this. All players are fighting for their NFL future. They know that even if they're not fighting for a postseason spot, they are fighting for their roster spot next year. They are putting things on tape. They have done all the work to be out there. And then the folks who are supposed to be leading them come out and say things like this. And this is an ego-driven business. And this is not going to go over well. Is it the end-all, be-all? Is it the death knell of the buck? No. Is it good? No, it's really not.
All right. Let's get to one fun, because I would much prefer to talk about actually good coaching a little bit on this podcast. We'll get to one fun and the San Francisco 49ers. All right, EJ. One fun here. Our good buddy Brad Spielberger over at PFF tweeted out quite possibly the most ridiculous stat of the entire year.
Sometimes stats are just so out there that they smack you across the face like a cold fish, and you just go, what? Is that true? The 49ers have not allowed a second half point, not a single one, since week 7.
That was like a month ago. Well, 6 weeks ago.
6 weeks ago. Your months are kind of long in your world. D'Amico Ryan's for president at this point. This is ridiculous. I retweeted this and said, you know, second half adjustments. I got your second half adjustments right here. Unreal. In a league that is completely geared towards offense, scoring points, high-flying, high-octane passing games, to be able to say we've shut out everybody we've faced for basically more than now the second half of our current season is staggering. It's unreal. I mean, you could just get unlucky. Guy falls down, right? Somebody goes for a 60-yard streak on a 9 route. Like, not having allowed any is a testament to D'Amico Ryan's leadership, to the players, again, rallying for that guy, playing, being consistent, filling their gaps, doing what they need to do to be, I would say, the most fundamentally sound defense in the league. It's just ridiculous. But if you haven't had enough ridiculous out of that stat, one more. Justin Tucker has made 90 in a row inside 30 yards. The guy is an absolute machine. We all know, we all joke about it, but they said that stat in the broadcast, and I was like, again, like,
I wonder
one
if anybody's ever
snap.
Got to 100. Like, I doubt it, but
yeah,
that's crazy.
One bad snap, one, you know, slippery field, one loose cleat, whatever. 90. Just as close to perfection as you can be in the NFL kicking game. It's, you know, those are fun things when they pop up, because you start thinking about, oh, man, 90. What are all the things that could have gone wrong? And the answer is nothing went wrong, and that's no accident.
A little schematic note on the thing that Brad tweeted out about no second half points for the 49ers since week 7. And you mentioned second half adjustments. Well, they actually are pretty dramatic second half adjustments. If you look at, you know, the coverages that they tend to play in quarters 1 and quarter 2, they are 8% cover 2. They're like 20th in the league. They stick to, you know, mostly quarters cover 3, some man coverage here and there, but like, they don't really play a whole lot of cover 2 in the first half. In the third and fourth quarter, though, by contrast. Typically, ideally, when the offense has got working a little bit and Kittle's got his and Deepo's got his and Ayuk's got his and whatever running back that week has got theirs, you know, typically, if the 49ers can put up points in the first half, you look at the second half, they are number one in the league in playing cover two. They play it 25% of the time, which relative to the rest of the league is a fucking lot. And so you might think, okay, well, cover two, like, you can dink and dunk your way down the field, and they're playing, quote-unquote, soft zone. Like, how do they not even get a field goal against that? The answer is Fred Warner. Because yep. The way that the 49ers can play cover two is different than the way that everyone else can play cover two, because they have Fred Warner as the pole runner up the middle in those cover two looks. So the safeties can expand super wide. You're getting dick out in the boundaries. You're getting absolutely nothing. Nothing on smash because the safeties are overplaying it. Nothing in the flats because the corners are overplaying it. The hook zone defenders can just park themselves inside and say, go ahead, run across. We don't care. Like, we're going to pick you up. They can overplay everything outside as well as those shallow crosses, because the one area that's supposed to be a weakness, that kind of deep middle seam, has Fred Warner there. And he is basically a DB shaped like a linebacker. Mm-hmm. He changes everything. He changes the math. He changes how you can attack this defense. They can do things in cover two that nobody else can do because that is their middle linebacker. And that is why they call so much cover two in the second half, because they know you're going to have to throw. And they know that they can still stop the run from that too. But like, they know that you're going to have to grit your teeth and try to test Fred Warner to win that football game. And guess what? You're not going to pass that test. And so DeMeco Ryans knows that he has a super weapon. He knows that he can call his defense a certain way, and he takes advantage of that. And that's why, at least in the last half of the year, nobody can score on them in the second half. And it's a very unique situation that no other defense, I think, can pull off, because nobody else has Fred Warner.
Jimmies and Joes, better than X's and O's. And in this case, Jimmies and Joes that make X's and O's. And this defense and the way it's called and the way it works is very familiar to Bears fans who were around in the Lovey era, like 2005, because it was the same deal. They had a DB shaped in a linebacker's body who could run the seam like nobody's business and snuff the run. And they basically said, yeah, we're going to do it. And we saw many defenses throughout the NFL try and do the same thing. Oh, Legion of Boom, everybody wants to play cover three. Oh, well, you don't have Earl Thomas running the middle. You don't have Cam slamming the short stuff. You don't have Richard Sherman at the boundary, right? So they didn't have the same success. And most teams that try and play cover two don't have anywhere near the success, because they don't have Urlacher or Fred Warner running the middle. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, that becomes the gap to attack, and it's a pretty big one. And you see middle linebackers get run by all the time. We saw it in the Lions game, right? No shot to Rodriguez. He can't run like that.
Oh, we saw in the Chiefs-Bucks game, I think it was like week four or week five, the Chiefs hit a seam ball to MVS up the middle because they got him matched up. I think it was Devin White. They got MVS matched up on Devin White running the pole up the middle. And like, if that was against Fred Warner, yeah, he probably sticks with it. But, like, he's the only one who can do it. Mm-hmm. Because if you keep calling that much cover two, guess what? They're going to take a receiver that runs 4-3 and run up the middle and say, okay, we'll take the 40 yards. Can't do it against San Francisco. They're too different. But, anyway, I love DeMeco Ryans. Love Fred Warner. I really got to go out to a Niners game at some point, because I've been in the stadium. I've been on the field, but I've never been there for a game. And they're only 6 hours away. I really should make a trip. Actually, they might be easier for you to get there than me.
If I'm flying, it's really easy. If I'm driving, it's a significant drive. It's 12, 13 hours, maybe.
But it's a gorgeous drive, though. You go down the Oregon coast, right, I would imagine?
Oh, no, not if I'm trying to make time. If I have all the time in the world, I'll go down 101 for sure. But, no, I would love to. We could meet in the middle. It'd be great. Go hang out. We could go to Ted's Bakery. Our good buddy Ted Wen owns a bakery in Oakland.
Yeah, and it looks ridiculous.
Oh yeah,
like, I don't know if you follow him on Instagram, but like, oh my god. Ted is gifted.
I try not to look at their food because it just makes me want to eat it. But no, I would love to end up down in Santa Clara.
All right, we'll find a way. Yeah. We'll find a way. Levi's is fun. I like Levi's. All right, EJ, let's get to the bootleg shot of the week. Bootleg shot of the week, EJ. I went through my bar for a few minutes downstairs, and I was like, what do I need to get rid of? And I don't want to be judged for this, because I know it's not a cheap bottle, but I really do enjoy it. And I thought, you know what? I've never taken a shot of this before, so I'm going to do it. Whistle Pig 10, one of my favorite ryes. And it's hot, by the way. It's like 100 proof, so this is going to be semi-painful, but also delicious. What do you got?
Good times. You know that saying in life, it's the little things?
Uh-huh.
I agree. It's the little things. A couple of weeks ago, I went to the liquor store, and not that I've not had Buffalo Trace before, but I was like, hey, you can get a pint of Buffalo Trace for like $19. That would be a cool little thing to have around for the holidays.
It's a stocking stuffer. Yeah.
Yeah, right? It's a stocking stuffer. But the other thing that's a little bit different this week is I will not be throwing this over ice because I'm pouring it right now. And the reason for that is I really feel, and you can tell me if you think I'm wrong, that Buffalo Trace is like old-time Old West whiskey.
Like I think it is the most classic bourbon profile out there.
Yeah, so when, you know, the cowpoke rolls into the bar and it's all dusty and there's not a cube of ice around for like 100 miles, you're not getting ice to that thing. They like wipe the dust out of the glass and, you know, that would be Buffalo Trace. So I feel like it's authentic to the brand to do it this way. But who won?
You know what? We actually, for the first time, probably in Shot of the Week history, a non-NFL player has won Bootleg Shot of the Week. We got a security guard taking on an invader to the field. Some fan got on the field. I don't even know what college game this was. No idea what game it was. But the security guard came in, clearly played at some point in his life, because he laid out this dude on the sideline, sent him flying. Was an amazing hit. One of the biggest shots, honestly, that we've had all year long. And it wasn't even a player. So shout out to a nameless security guard who we don't know who you are, but good work, sir. Keeping the field safe for everybody.
Win one for the little guys.
Wow, that actually goes down. That's 100 proof? Bro, that's like, I would put that on pancakes.
Well,
oh my God.
I happen to be a maple syrup guy on pancakes, but I get what you're going for. However, I don't know. Have you ever made waffles with bourbon in the batter?
Yeah. Actually, you made them for me. That was the first time I ever had them when you were down at my house. And I was like, well, I'm never not doing that again. It's incredible.
Yeah. It is kind of one of those crossed lines that you can't go back on once you've had them. They're really good. But I got to say, with no ice, Buffalo Trace, man. It, you know, yeah, there's heat there, but it's not, it doesn't like kick you. It just reminds you that, yes, indeed, I am bourbon. And
it's not absinthe. I'll take
no.
it.
No. No, it is not.
Last week hurt, by the way. I took a nap at like in the middle of Monday. I took a nap because I just couldn't function anymore. I ordered a pizza and a whole thing of wings, and my wife came home. She's like, what did you do?
Are you okay? Yeah, the answer is no, I'm not okay. I'm glad you didn't take a nap in the middle of the podcast. We made a short about that.
We've been
dropping shorts on YouTube. If you are not familiar with what we're talking about, go to the Bootleg YouTube channel. Go to the shorts row. It's the second one down. And watch most of Brett's four shots of absinthe. Only one of my two is on there, which is just fine by me because it's just pain all around.
Yeah, my wife came home at like 5 o'clock at night, and I'm sprawled out on the couch with an open box of pizza and half a plate of wings, and the cat's sitting there like just disappointed in me. She's like, "You're 31. What are you doing?" It's work,
you know,
honey. It's work.
Yeah, and you should have been like raising money for hunger.
All right, let's get to this week's nominees. Number one, talked about him a little bit earlier in the show. Samaje Perine, first play of the game. Setting the tone, stiff arm of the century, driving some poor Titans DB face first into the dirt. Hell of a stiff arm by him. We've actually had some pretty good stiff arms this year. This one might be the best. Tyus Bowser, in that aforementioned Jags Ravens game. Trevor never saw him coming, you know, kind of pursuit. Trevor rolled right. Bowser came in from behind, like second phase of the rush, smacked him from behind, forced the fumble. Big, big shot. We have a mutual shot of the week, kind of a human car crash here between Jalen Hawkins and Brian Robinson, who had one of his big breakout games that we've been waiting for a while. Ran tough, ran hard, ran straight into Jalen Hawkins, and they bounced off each other. You know, Robinson did stay up, so I'll kind of give him a little bit more credit, but Hawkins smacked him, man. And just, you know, giving that many pounds to Robinson, I think Hawkins is like 35 pounds lighter than him, and stopping him cold, at least for a moment after squaring him up, still really impressive. And Robinson, obviously, staying up is pretty insane. And then Sean McVay, we got a coach nominee here. He didn't deliver the shot, but he took the shot. I think it was somebody was running out for special teams. I can't remember who it was. And Sean was looking at the field, and they just didn't see each other. And Sean took a shoulder to the jaw and a helmet to the forehead. He caught all of it. And it looked bad. It looked really painful. You saw him on the sideline grabbing his jaw like, oh, did I just knock a tooth out? Like, it was rough, but he stayed in the game. Was able to coach. Obviously, you know, didn't go the way he wanted on the field because the Chiefs are the Chiefs. But I'll be damned. Sean McVay, not a pussy. I'll give him that.
So we can say we're just like Sean McVay? That we
Taken a hit like that before.
No, we took a shot and stay in the game.
No, it was... I swear to God, like, lesser men would be on the ground for that.
Well,
one.
You and I'm and many others have been there, right? We've been on the sidelines with
it's
these
terrifying guys
in pads. It's people don't understand it. People, you know, I could do this, I could do that. The first time, and it is different. Even if you have been in the first row of the stands, you're elevated, you're another 20, 30, 40 feet away from it. It is different. The first time that you stand on the sidelines for either a D1 college football game or a pro game specifically, it is terrifying. The size of these guys, the speed at which they move, and the impact, the pure force of them hitting each other right in front of you is, it does. It takes your breath away. You literally sort of gasp the first time it happens right in front of you. Two guys, you know, running back and a linebacker, and they're coming towards the sideline. You're like, I don't want to get hit. I don't want to get hit. So you're backing up, and these two guys just rail into each other. Rack! And you hear that plastic crack, and you're like, oh, my God. Like, that's two huge guys bent on destruction, and they just full force. Neither one of them let up. They just barreled ahead and went into it. And it sets you back. You go, oh, this is real now. Like, oof. And it was funny. First day of Shrine practice last year on the field at UNLV. And I was just sort of walking around the field trying to get a good vantage point, figuring out like where drills were going to be. Everybody's just sort of got there and figuring things out for the first time. And the linemen were warming up, the offensive linemen. And they were they didn't even have their helmets on. But they were running like sprints from the 10 yards in towards the goal line. And I was on the goal line, and I turned around, and here come a row, you know, 15, 20 deep of 300 to 320 plus pound guys.
One of them was Bam Olesenni, by the way.
Yeah.
It was like 6'8", 350.
And they're jogging. It's warm up. So they're basically sprinting for about three steps, and then they're just jogging out the next, you know, seven or eight steps to carry them over the 10 yards. And I sort of had my head down. I was looking at the notebook and look at the rosters, and I look up, and here comes this line of 15, 20 guys, and they're like, oh. And like my heart did the like lion on the Serengeti thing. You're like, oh my God, like I'm in the way of a mass of humanity that's going to run me over. And you do, you sort of jump and you realize the size and the power and the speed. And you're just like, oh, okay. All right. Head on swivel, pay attention. I'm really glad they're not here to hit me.
When I was at Niners practice in August, when I was on the sidelines doing photography, and they were doing like scoop block drills, and it was Nick Bosa handling a scoop from George Kittle and Trent Williams. And I swear to God, like, it sounded like two semis running into each other full speed.
Yeah.
And I mean, Nick Bosa, for whatever, he's got the physique of a Greek god, but like Trent is Trent. Yeah. And Kittle, people don't give Kittle enough credit. Like, that dude could play tackle. I swear to God, he could play tackle. He doesn't look like it, but he is so freaking strong and dense. And when they were firing off full speed against each other, I was like, how do any of you live through this? No. And you do it 20 times a year. How do you live through this? Like, it's insane what these people go through.
Yeah, and, I always think about...
People complain that they make all this money, and I'm like, dude, you do that. You go do that. Like,
no, it's as soon as you see one of those impacts, and there are several throughout the game, even with positions like wide receiver that don't take as much impact and whatever else. There was a shot of the week nominee we didn't put in between Dev DuVernay hitting Andre Sisco in the Ravens-Jags game. Andre Sisco is an absolute hammer, safety out of Syracuse, and he's been laying people out this year. He is a flat-out hitter. Mm-hmm. And Dev Duve shoulder blocked him into the turf full speed, both of them coming. Again, nobody gave an inch. DuVernay just pounded him into the turf and stood there and was like, yeah, keep coming. Like, just one of those is enough to make you hurt for 2 or 3 weeks, and they take my labor multiples. Just thinking about it. And I always think about when you're talking about like scoop blocks and impact and stuff like that, concussions obviously thing, I always think about the small bones. I'm like, the bones in your wrist, like, you're, again, with a guy like Trent Williams, who's incredibly large, very powerful, Kittle as well, like, going up against a guy like Bosa, who is built like a block of granite, and you're just, like, firing into that guy. You're like, how much stress is on the little bones in your wrist? The answer is a fuck ton. Like, that's a metric measurement. You know,
I remember when I was at NFL Network and I first met Brian Baldinger.
he
likes to fuck with people by reaching out with his
with his screwed up
his
hand.
Index to shake your hand. And he's like, go ahead, take it. Because like it's hard to miss. It's really hard to miss. And but that's like, you look at every O-lineman from back then, like before they kind of did the
100%.
Like, they taped, but not, like, today.
No, they just taped their knuckles.
You know, like, all of them. All of their fingers are messed up.
Yeah.
Because how could they not be? Like, it's almost impossible to play 10 years.
I mean, you even look at guys like Calvin Johnson.
Uh-huh.
Right? Calvin Johnson, Megatron, right? He was catching all those rockets from Stafford. And was like, oh, Stafford's got a big arm. That's amazing. Well, there's somebody on the other end of that cannon. And it's Calvin Johnson. Calvin Johnson is huge. By receiver standards, he's massive. He holds his hands up, and it's, you know, Chris Carter, same way. Like, there is a cost to playing this game that is really ridiculous, but the impact in general, especially on the offensive-defensive line clash, that playing in a phone booth, that every play that a lot of people don't look at, like, as you learn more about football, you tend to focus on that interaction more. The old, you know, the title of Pat Kirwan's book, Take Your Eye Off the Ball, right? Look at all the other things. Those are the things you start to gravitate towards, and then you realize that, like, all the work that, like, Brandon Thorne does on both sides of the ball and rating that, like, the impact between those guys. And then you stand there and look at it point blank, and it's something else.
Yeah. Gotta love this sport. It's terrifying, but I love
it. It's terrifying, but it is fascinating.
All right, let's get to week 13 watch list. EJ, take it away.
Yeah, so Titans, Eagles, enough said. We've talked about the Titans. We've talked plenty about the Eagles on this podcast. This is a sort of measuring stick game for the conferences, if you want. Eagles mashing away in the NFC. Titans, middle of the pack of playoff contenders, I would say, in the AFC. Both very physical teams. Gonna be a slobber knocker. Commanders, Giants, big for the overall result in the NFC East. The NFC East is the most successful division in football in terms of wins this season, and that makes the pairings incredibly close, which makes the pairings head-to-head mean even more. They basically count double. So that one's got a lot of significance. Chiefs, Bengals could be an eventual playoff matchup. We saw it last year en route to the Super Bowl. This is a big one. And then fascinated by, gotta say, Dolphins 49ers. Mike McDee's homecoming game. He goes back to the Bay Area. He was with Shanahan for many years throughout his entire career. Now gets his shot as the head guy coaching the Dolphins. Has incredible immediate success. Gets to come home and play his mentor, let's call him that, partner, whatever you want to call him. And this is going to be a fun one. Two schemes with a little bit of new sprinkle or flavor with all the weapons they have in Miami. Really want to see how it comes out, especially against that D'Amico Ryans defense.
I don't know what the over-under is for Dolphins 49ers. I don't think it's high enough, whatever it is. Like these teams are going to score a lot. They're like, this is going to be the game that's really going to test like D'Amico's second half, because if there's one team that has the speed to match up with Fred Warner in cover two, it's that one. Because I love Fred, but I don't know if you're going to run with Tyreek. Like, if you get Tyreek at the number three spot, that's when I'm like, get the fuck out of cover two. Get out of cover two. Do anything else. Don't do that. Like, if there's one team that I think could break that, I think it's the Dolphins. So I'm fascinated, absolutely fascinated to see how that works. And I'm a little bit annoyed that the NFL didn't flex out Cowboys Colts and put that in primetime.
Come on. I'm
a lot of bit annoyed.
Yeah, but I'm a lot of bit annoyed because it's like, if here's the chance, right? We're going to serve you up one late season that you know is going to be good. And up to like 3 weeks ago, to be fair, we didn't know that it was going to be great. The Niners had to rally a bit. The Dolphins have been churning along. But since the Niners have rallied, oh, that elevates that game. It makes it all that much more interesting.
Yeah, and I get it. Like, the Cowboys are good, and when the Cowboys are good, you have them in prime time. But, like, the Colts are not good. I'm trying to be generous here. They're not good.
They're fascinating.
Matt Ryan is going to be publicly executed on national television, and I am not looking forward to that. Like, I had to stomach the Steelers game last night. And I like Kenny Pickett. I love George Pickens. Like, there's a lot of things I like about the Steelers. There's a lot of things I like about the Colts. Like, Jelani had a good game. You know, Alec Pierce, Michael Pittman, Jonathan Taylor. Like, they got some players I genuinely love. Grover Stewart, one of the best players in the league nobody ever talks about. But holy shit, that was hard to watch.
It was really hard to watch. It was not Titans-Bengals. Lot of fun to watch. And that's the thing in this business. There are games that are fun to watch. There are games that are fascinating. There are games that are interesting. And then there are games, many of which all of you have sat through with us on Thursday nights, that are, we do this for work.
Yes, yes. And that's when we drink absinthe, to forget the pain. Because anything is better.
We're not going to be drinking absinthe, though. We're going to change that drink in the future.
For my own health, I don't think I could do four absinthe shots on a podcast again. I just can't. That really hurt. That really, really hurt. But all right. Thank you to all of our executive producers. We have a lot of them now. Marat, Consti, Caden, Andrew, Taylor, Liam, Connor, Joey, brand new. Welcome, Joey, to be an executive producer. And Mike L., also, welcome to Mike to be an executive producer. They both stepped up in the last week to join the ranks of our EPs. So welcome to Joey and Mike. And honorary producer for this week, Find a Cure, for everything that he donated in our last live stream to force us, unwillingly, to doing those absinthe shots. He's the one who made that possible. So thank you to Find a Cure, our honorary producer for this week. EJ, you got anything coming on Bears Over Beers?
I think we're going to shift up a little bit. The Bears season has shifted, so we're going to shift as well to meet it. My thought is that we're going to talk about what's left for the Bears this year. Seems like Justin's probably going to be out for a bit. That's been the key focus. So what do Bears fans look for the rest of the season, as that's the reality? No, Justin, what should Bears fans watch throughout the rest of the year to make this season worthwhile? So I think that's going to be our focus for the week.
And then I myself actually have two other things coming out this week. One of them just went live while we were recording this. I have a, you know, people have been asking for a long time, like, when are you going to do like classic film breakdowns of stuff that happened a long time ago? My first one just went live on J.J. Watt. 2014, when he single-handedly beat the Buffalo Bills without getting a sack. And the NFL decided to put that on the main NFL YouTube channel. So that just went live today. I'm super fucking excited. But working on that.
Dude, congratulations. That's for those of you that don't know or are new to Bootleg, in terms of Brett's story, starting as a PA at the NFL, being a Texans fan, those two things sort of fusing together, and now the NFL promoting his content now that he's left on his own about one of his favorite players ever. Like, there's so many notes in that particular song that are playing just perfectly. Cheers to you, man. That one's huge.
I was, God, what was it? 23 years old. When I was at the NFL Network, and I cut the highlight for that game, and then I cut a music video for it because I did overnight shifts around then too. And God, 8 years later, to do the thing that I always wanted to do with that game, which was do a breakdown of it, a long form breakdown of that game, which, you know, it was a regular season Texans Bills game. Nobody's fucking paying attention, like CJ Manuel. But at the time, and I was also a writer at Battle Red Blog, another SB Nation site, sister site of Windy City Gridiron. And, you know, at the time I was writing for BRB, and we were all losing our minds over that game. And 8 years later, to come full circle, you know, at the place that I started to do the content that I always wanted to do on YouTube, it's wild how life works out, man. It really is. So go watch that if you're interested in classic J.J. Watt being utterly absurd and making EJ Manuel's life hell.
Yeah, the other EJ, not me, luckily.
The other EJ.
Speaking of being chased, there's one guy I don't want to be chased by ever.
Especially 2014 Watt, when he was like, at the height of his powers. And then I also got a film room on my channel coming out this week on Patrick Mahomes being a fucking cheat code and how the Chiefs offense has adjusted this year and still might be better than ever. So go check that out when it comes out. I think on Saturday is what we're shooting for. So, yeah, lots coming this week on Bears Over Beers, Film Room, and the NFL channel. We hope you'll come by on Thursday for our Thursday live stream of shit. Pats Bills. There we go.
Pats Bills. No, this one has the potential to be both a meaningful game. Again, as a divisional game, counts twice. In terms of, hey, if you knock somebody off, the head-to-head is significant. And, you know, while the Patriots' rushing stats may have dropped off, this is always going to be a bit of a grudge match.
Yeah, so it should be a fun game. Really, really excited for it. And we'll see you then. And until then, have a wonderful week.
Take care.